good having ma'am. Leave it after. You know where I am. I'm not sure what time it is. As an intern at the center. Okime, please kindly briefly introduce yourself.
My name is Okime, and I'm an intern at the National Econ Center under Nigerian Economy Summit Group. And I am the co-host and co-hosting today. And it's so lovely to have you here. Can't wait to hear you.
All right. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Okime, for the wonderful introduction. So today we'll be looking at an analysis or the implications of the recent tax reform laws that was recently signed into law by His Excellency President Bola Ahmed Tinubu. And today we have an expert, a tax expert, an international tax expert at that, who will be discussing with us and sharing insights as to the implications of the tax laws, especially as it concerns or affects the business environment as well as citizens. So with us today we have Ms. Mfon Etukeren Umor. Kindly introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about your expertise.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be on this platform and to be speaking about this. So my name is Mfon. I am an international tax expert. My background is in international tax, but I've seen various aspects of tax. I've seen personal income tax. I've seen partnerships. I work in partnerships. I've worked with mostly international corporations. So that's my varied background, but that really touches upon everything. I've been a tax practitioner since 2013, but I've been in the industry since 2007, but I didn't focus specifically on tax, particularly international tax, until 2013. So there's a lot that I've seen. It's very exciting, exciting times.
Thank you very much, ma'am, for the very wonderful introduction. It's so good to have you with us today to have this discussion on the recent tax reforms in Nigeria. So moving straight on, I'll just move to the first question that we have. Considering that the tax reform agenda has actually generated considerable discussion across the country, in your opinion, how would you describe the manner in which these reforms have been introduced? And also, do you believe that Nigeria is currently do you believe the Nigeria's readiness at this point actually signifies that they have the institutional maturity to be able to carry?
That's a very good question. Thank you for that question. So I'm going to answer candidly. So I've seen tax changes in various countries, and I will be honest when I say nobody is ever really ready. The citizens are not ready for the rollout of the new regulations because it's a change. The businesses are not fully ready because it's also a change. And unless they have taken the time on the back end prior to the enactment and rollout of the law to change their business structures, to change operational things that are going to be affected, or what they perceive is going to be affected by the changes in the tax law, then there's going to be an element of unreadiness. And conversely, the regulators, unless they've also taken all the time to anticipate the many, 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 many questions and issues that could come up as a result of this rollout and enacting and enforcement, then the institutions themselves are not also ready. So nobody's ever fully ready. So I'll just caveat that. But that being said, before these things are rolled out, I'm going to answer the question from a personal perspective, and then I'll answer the question from a professional perspective. You know, the manner in which the rollout was, the manner in which, you know, the law was introduced. I'm calling it rollout just because that is a terminology that I tend to use, but the manner in which the law was introduced. You know, from a personal perspective, I might say, I'm not sure if I'm comfortable with the manner in which it was rolled out from a personal perspective. Why? Because nobody sat down and spoke to me and asked me what my concerns were and asked me, if we do A, how do you think it will affect you? But obviously, that's in a perfect world, right? But from a professional perspective, I think what we have to understand is that as individuals, taxes are complicated. And a lot of people don't like them. They don't like to be charged taxes. And when you talk to them about it, they don't like to discuss it. So taxes are complicated. So from a professional perspective, there's only so much you can do in a field where it is inherently complicated. And when people hear the word tax, and then they know, especially here in Nigeria, they hear the word tax. And then depending on who the individual is, the institution is, the president at the time, can affect how they perceive it. So when we hear tax in Nigeria, we're not thinking, oh, the federal government or the state government or the local government is going to do something useful with my money. There's an element of distrust. So before these kind of rollouts happen, the regulatory body has to ensure that these things are addressed on the front end. You talk to the citizenry about, this is how much revenue we anticipate. This is what we're going to do with it. That way, everything is transparent. And so there's always room for improvement, right, in everything. But these are some of the things that professionally, we have to remember to take into consideration. It's not just understanding the tax law. It's also, how are people perceiving this rollout, and how are they going to, based on where they live, right, in Nigeria, and how are they going to react according to that? So that might be a roundabout way of answering your question.
Very good. Thank you for the panel, of course. Okay, we'll be taking the next person.
All right. So thank you so much. So the second question is, so given your assessment of the Nigeria's institutional maturity for these reforms already, what specific capacity building measures should precede or, you know, accompany the implementation to prevent the reforms from failing or just not performing properly? What do you think should accompany this implementation? What should be done alongside the implementation as well? Thank you.
Okay, I understand. So I just want to, so regard to institutional maturity, this is not to say that Nigerian institutions are not mature, right? So I just want to make that clear, that this is not to say that Nigerian institutions are not mature in the way that, this is not to say that, but as far as capacity building measures, what do you mean by capacity building measures? Can you give me more insight? I want to answer the question that you're actually asking, not the question that I think.
So the capacity in question is the capacity of to handle or take on the duty of accessing the tax to be paid, ensuring compliance, and also collection of taxes. Now, so the implementation in question, considering that we've now metamorphosed from Federal Inland Revenue Service to, of course, with the establishment of the Nigerian Revenue Service. So there's been the part of morphing into the Nigerian Revenue Service. And that now also gives the expanded duty of the Nigerian Revenue Service not to only collect tax for the federal government, but now collect tax for the entire federation. So the capacity we are referring to here is their capacity to be able to, of course, fulfill their duties, which is the aspect of assessing tax, collecting tax, and of course, for lack of a better word, the implementation or part of ensuring that citizens are actually compliant with the payment of taxes.
Oh, okay. So I didn't quite hear everything, but I'm going to answer what I think I heard. And what you're asking essentially is, with this metamorphosis that's happening from FIRS to Nigerian Revenue Service, is the system, as Nigerian Revenue Service, are they able to handle the various functions that they will now be handling, and what will that look like? Is that sort of what you're asking? I couldn't
Yes,
pick
so
up
are
on
they
every
able to,
word.
yes, are they able to handle that? And if you feel, based on your assessment, that they are unable to handle that, what are the specific measures you feel that they could take to better build their capacity in being able to handle those?
Fantastic. Great question. So I'm going to answer it backwards as far as the specific measures. So the success, from what I see, sometimes depending on the country that you're looking at, the success of a particular tax rollout depends on the measures that have been set up prior to the rollout, right? It depends on how well sensitized the citizens are. This is what you'll be doing. This is what is expected of you, so on and so forth. How well trained the professionals are that will be responsible for now dealing with these new tax laws, with their clients, with their customers, what have you. And also how well trained the regulatory body is in terms of, okay, this is how we understand it. If companies in this band do XYZ, this is the result. This is what we expect from the citizens. This is, these kinds of things we're not going to pay attention to. If a citizen doesn't pay tax for 1 year, we're not going to make an issue about it. So all of those things have to have been done in the back end. And that really determines the success of the rollout on the front end. So, and of course, that affects implementation. And now, if that isn't done, then there's going to be issues. There's going to be challenges along the way. Because nobody says, I'm going to build a house, right? And they don't take into consideration the cost of building the house, the materials that are needed, who is going to build that house with them, what type of labor, when the house is going to be built, what kind of sort. No, nobody, people don't do that. And so it's the same thing with this kind of rollout. So the things that can be set in place are these types of things. It's not obviously, it's never too late to do something that improves a particular implementation or rollout. So those are the types of things that need to happen. And when what we've what I what I've tended to see is that when these things happen, the rollout now becomes smooth. Not everybody is going to like it, but in terms of expectation and what to do, people tend to know, okay, all right, this is what the federal government wants me to do. I may not like it, but I'm going to do it because I know I have to do it. And on the back, and of course, enforcement-wise, you have clarity from the regulatory body. This is what the law says, but this is what the law actually means. Because what it says and what it means can sometimes be different in tax just simply because of terminology. You get more clarity as you're writing and as you are talking to individuals, things like that. So when all of that is done, we see that the system is not able to handle the changes that it has said it wants to do, because it will have done all of the things that need to be done. So.
Awesome. Thank you very much for providing these insights, ma'am. Okay, ma'am, please take on the next question.
Thank you, William.
Okay, sorry, my bad. All right, so the next question. So the proposed shift to a derivation-based VAT distribution model sparks significant debates. I mean, everyone is speaking about it. There's the uproar on social media, and almost everybody in the country is speaking about it. From an international best practice perspective, how do successful federal systems balance consumption-based VAT distribution with regional equity concerns, especially when there are significant economic disparities between these regions?
Yeah, this was such a good question. So I think it's important to kind of understand what that very technically sounding term that you said, derivation-based model, what that is. So what, and this is obviously not for you, Okime, or Mr. William, but it's just for those that might be watching. So that type of model will determine, that type of model says revenue from taxes should go rather than where the company is. We'll just use company just for an example. It's going to go to where excuse me. Sorry. that was a sneeze that took a long time to come out. Anyway, so it's going to go to where that was derived, where the word derivation comes from. Where did this come from, right? Where did this tax revenue come from? And so the issue, so that's that in the first place. So that's just simply what that is saying. And the disproportionate, what people perceive to be a disproportionate impact is now sparking a lot of controversy, understandably. So it's important to kind of take a step back and say, okay. Okay, man, can you read me the question again? Because I want to answer it step by step.
Sorry, what did you say?
Can you please read me the question again? Because I want to answer it step by step. I wanted to kind of give an understanding of what their derivation base was and then go into the question that has fallen off my screen.
I'm going to ask you to come again because I didn't get what you said.
That's no problem. No problem. I will go ahead and answer the question. So how do successful federal systems kind of balance this, right, as relating to regional equity concerns? So before a federal government decides this is how we're going to split and share, they now have to think about, okay, what do we want to accomplish with the money that we see coming in? What are the concerns that we have that we want to address? Now, we have to understand that the concerns of a federal government are going to be different from the concerns of a local government, different from the concerns of a state government. So the federal government can say, of the money that is coming in, we are going to put it towards A, B, and C. And because of that, A, B, and C could be, you know, we're going to put it towards XYZ in Nasarawa, something else in Borno, and then something else maybe in Ekiti, right? Whatever the federal government has planned in those states. So that impacts those kind of concerns, that impacts how these things now get shared. So, which kind of goes to the question of, you know, regional equity concerns. So go ahead, William.
With you.
Okay. You're with me. So that goes to the whole concern of these regional equity concerns. So how does a successful federal system balance these things, right? How does it balance these things? That's where we were talking about earlier. One has to understand the concerns of, I mean, before a model is even proposed, because we were not sitting down with the regulators saying what was going to happen. Of course, when it all came out, the states were like, we don't like this model. We don't like this particular rollout that has been proposed. But that's where taking into account the concerns of the state, that maybe the federal government might be interested in doing something in. Because if somebody says, if the federal government decides that they're going to build, let's just say they're going to build another NIP, the person, NIPS, they're going to build a NIPS hub in Lagos. Lagos doesn't need a NIPS hub. Like, they don't. Or if they say we're going to build another customs office, another regional customs office in Lagos. Well, they already have a big one. They don't need another one. So it might be best to put that in a different state. So unless these kind of things are done, there's going to be issues. And so federal systems have to balance these things. Like, for example, I'm not going to name countries, but in a country where you have multiple states, and that model is proposed, what I've seen the federal government do is have a conversation with the state and say, hey, this is what we want to do. Do you already have this in your budget, on your state budget, nothing to do with federal sharing? The state can say, yes, we have it. So guess what the federal government is not going to do? They're not going to put their resources towards putting a particular federal institution or federal interest in that particular state because it's already taken care of. And so what they'll do is they might put it someplace else that makes more maybe secondary strategic sense or whatever. So that is kind of how these federal systems balance these things. It takes conversation and it takes a lot of conversation. And the conversation is not always fun. And it's over a long period of time. What I see is that when tax rollouts happen in a short period of time where there have not been sufficient conversations, you invariably run into concerns, sometimes challenges that you cannot overcome ever. So that's kind of how these federal systems manage, to answer your question, that's kind of how they manage these type of concerns. It's through a lot of conversation on the front end. And when you do that, I think you will now begin to address the economic disparities between regions, right? Because you'll see that one particular state doesn't need the money, that one particular state is not going to disproportionately hold or have money when they don't necessarily need it, whereas it might make better sense sometimes for it to go to another state, though that state is not as developed, is not as populous, but it's probably well more strategically located and to handle whatever it is that federal interests are. But federal interest they're always key in these balancing acts. That was a very long answer. I apologize.
Absolutely okay.
I wanted to make sure I provided an answer to every single word that was asked.
But just picking up from what you said, the thought that comes to mind is, considering the significant economic concentration in Lagos, which is mostly considered as a commercial hub of Nigeria, if not Africa, as well as of some of the oil-producing states, do you perhaps think that there could be a situation where an hybrid system could work? And by hybrid system, what I mean is combining the derivation model, population development indices, in order to be able to arrive at possibly a more appropriate derivation-based system.
That's such a good question.
Yeah.
That is such a good question. And I think that hinges on availability of data. And that data has to be data that is correct. So if we say that, you know, let's take into account population, you know, and I know that some populations in certain states are not what it says on paper, right? Sure. For whatever reason, I'm not saying that, you know, that's an intentional thing that's happening, but that's what happens. So the issue of accuracy has to be addressed before you now shift into, even with this model that we currently have, the issue of accuracy has to be addressed. So you have to kind of address these issues first and make sure that what you're working with is correct and accurate. And I think that there could be benefits, but then other things have to be taken into consideration. Because if somebody says, we're going to take this model and then, you know, maybe add a population-based metrics to it that will determine revenue sharing or what have you. The question now comes, say, for example, DRC, Democratic Republic of Congo, right? They have they have minerals and they have access to diamonds. They have so many things, okay? But the what is taken out of the Democratic Republic of Congo and shipped out elsewhere shipped out to various African countries, places around the world or whatnot. Would we now say that because the population isn't there in the place where the mineral was taken from, that we can now factor in the fact that this is where the mineral comes from in the first place? So if not for them having these minerals and it being sent out, whether or not they have the population, we wouldn't have access to these minerals in the first place. So there's other things that you also have to take into consideration, because there are states in Nigeria that have the resources, don't have the population. So are we just now going to tap their resources, not consider tap their resources and not take that into consideration in a population-based model? So, you know, there's just all these small little factors that kind of you have to consider. And I know that that is turning in your head, Mr. William, as you ask the question. So that's, this kind of merger of various models could work, but there's many, many things to take into consideration in order for that to work. But it can easily work. In a country like Nigeria, I mean, Nigeria is, you know, 300 and something million people, massive country, but we know where certain things are. We know regionally where certain resources are. We know regionally where, you know, human capacity is, you know. So we kind of have all these things and we know all these things, and it tends to kind of stay that way year after year. So it's predictable in that sense. So we can easily work out a model that works for the country and the citizens that is kind of hybrid like you proposed. That's very good. You should be part of the National Assembly.
Thank you. Thank you very much, ma'am. Okay, please proceed.
All right. And the third question we have. So Nigeria reportedly had over 60 different taxes and levies across the federal, states, and the local levels. So from your experience with tax systems, what are the typical economic costs of such fragmented systems, and what benefits should realistically be expected from consolidation, and how might this improved clarity help attract FDI, foreign direct investment?
I love this question so much, simply because I used to work in FDI, but I'll just take it from the top, right? So what are the typical economic costs of such fragmented systems? Now, if we think about it, let's think about the tax system as a family unit. Now, in a family unit, you have mom, dad, maybe 3 to 4 siblings. You have uncles, aunties, you know, you have grandparents, nieces and nephews. So let's think about it as a family unit. And let's just make that family unit to just, you know, mom, dad, siblings, and grandparents, right? Now, in a fragmented family unit where the mother is not talking to the father and the siblings are not talking to each other, let's just say sibling one takes the side of the dad all the time, no matter what. Sibling two and three occasionally take the side of the mom, never take the side of the dad. You know, and the grandparents, they only step in when it's an issue that concerns them individually. So you see that it's messy. So in a fragmented family system, you're not going to have understanding. You're not going to have clarity in how to move the family forward. I'm sorry, somebody's mic is unmuted. And I'm hearing. Okay. You're not going to have an understanding of how to move the family forward together, different people's interests are going to outweigh another, and sometimes disproportionately. So you now see that in a fragmented family system, things are not really going to work out when they're fragmented. Conversely, with the fragmented tax system, it's the exact same thing. So with the fragmented tax system, it's going to come, you're going to have these, I think it was mentioned, compliance costs. So in a fragmented tax system, sometimes you may wind up paying more than you have to for something. Sometimes you may not know what you're paying for because it wasn't explained. Why? Because mom and dad aren't talking to each other. This institution and that institution aren't talking to each other. Siblings don't agree. You know, even within the same system, in the same, let's just use the banking system, for example, the financial system, people are not agreeing. The siblings are not agreeing. So compliance burden will increase. It will increase on the individual. Why? Say, for example, stamp duties, right? So say, for example, you know, when we see that, let's say, you see, you know, that 50 naira, when we receive money, we see that 50 naira charge that goes out for a transaction on our bank accounts. Okay. Now, say that is being charged. Also, let's just say what is also being charged in a fragmented tax system is a charge for monies that come into your account. And this is just how it will be written. You'll be charged for money that comes into your account. And yeah, you'll be charged 25 naira for money that comes into your account. And you're, that's the same thing. You're getting the same service, money coming into your account, but two different charges. So that is where that's where compliance burden increases on the individual. Because when you have a fragmented tax system, invariably something is going to be double charged, possibly something may be charged that may not necessarily, you don't need to be charged. So there's compliance burden increase on the individual and also on the regulatory body that is carrying out enforcement, which previously was Federal Inland Revenue. So now it's the Nigerian Revenue Service. So you have those increased burdens, administrative costs, same thing. In a fragmented family system where you want to move the family forward, if mom says, we're going to do this and it's going to cost us 1,000 naira, dad says, no, we're going to do something else. It's going to cost 5,000 naira. Siblings want to do something else. It's going to cost 20,000 naira. And maybe some of the things that the siblings want to do are exactly what the mom wanted to do. And everything that everybody wanted winds up being done. So cost increase. So that's how you have administrative costs that increase. And when you have a fragmented system, let's just say you will have creative ways of tax avoidance, right? You can call it, there's a difference between tax avoidance and tax evasion, although sometimes the line can be very fine. So these are the sort of economic costs with a fragmented system. There's no clarity. There's a lack of mistrust because everything appears to be disorganized and everywhere. So when you now consolidate, when you now take a family unit that gets that everybody gets along, mom and dad, you know, are talking to each other, they're in lockstep with each other, you'll now see that some of these costs, some of these burdens will now begin to be decreased. And what also tends to happen is that when that happens, because everybody's talking, everything is out in the open, the issue of trust or perception of mistrust, that also gets addressed. So the benefits are reduced time in compliance. The benefits are a better understanding of what is happening in terms for the citizens. So the citizens understand what is happening. They understand why it's happening. Better training will evolve from it because now mom and dad are talking. So mom is not contradicting dad and dad is not contradicting mom. So there's going to be better training out there for people to learn about, you know, the new tax system and so on and so forth. Businesses will, what businesses don't like, and I've seen this from place to place, they don't like many things, but lack of certainty is not something that businesses say, oh, we love an uncertain environment. No, they don't. So there'll be, you know, levels of certainty that will be provided. There's just so many benefits. But I want us to think about the tax system as a family unit. And if we see it that way, then we can also extrapolate the kind of benefits. So how is that going to improve clarity? How is that going to attract FDI? So in my work with foreign direct investment, whether it was an investor from, I worked with various investors, this was in Aquaibum, and from Israel to the United States, to the United Kingdom, to China, to South Africa, the thing that was very consistent that investors want is investors want a level of certainty. That is why when they sign agreements with the with the government, the local government, they tend to ask for a guarantee, because nobody wants to invest their money in a state if 95% chance there's going to be a coup. 95% chance economic conditions are going to be such that they don't have the workforce that is needed to carry out this investment. So they like that certainty. And that certainty comes, they like that certainty. So, but if that certainty is there, then if the clarity is there in our tax system, there's also a level of certainty that adds on the FDI side, because businesses know what they're getting into. They know if I come to Nigeria and this is my turnover, this is what is expected of me. I mean, nobody is confused. Nobody is, you know, upset. Everybody knows, and they can improve. They can proceed with their investments, because all of that uncertainty is factored into the cost of a foreign direct investment. The uncertainty is actually factored in. Like it has to be. But if you can provide that clarity and you kind of reduce these kind of burdens that companies think about when they're doing foreign direct investment, and I think you'll begin to see more investments that are, how we say it? I don't want to say more relevant, but more investments that we see as Nigerians, how it will benefit the location that the investment is in. Because sometimes investments come in and you roll your eyes and say, why is this here? Like, we don't need, like, why is this here? So I think you'll be kind of begin to see that. So hope that answers the question.
Yes, it does. Sorry, I was speaking and forgot I was booted. It does. Thank you very much. So it's actually very interesting how you used the family units to properly describe how the various not collecting bodies, but the part where the federal government runs a concurrent or probably a concurrent tax system with the state government as well as the local government. So you find a situation where the federal government is taxing for a particular thing. The same tax is applicable at both the states and the local government. But just moving away from the fact that there's now a consolidation of these taxes and there's now a central body collecting these taxes, What other processes do you think can be put in place to just move this from being a theoretical reform to actually something that is tangibly seen by the companies or businesses who are going to, of course, be the people who these reforms impact?
Such a good question. And what to see how that would look like, we have to understand as regulators, as professionals, what are the actual concerns of the business? I mean, what are their actual concerns? And so that conversation needs to be had, and those concerns now need to be baked in to whatever is going to be happening. So lack of trust, uncertainty in how the law should be carried out. What are the limits of carrying out that law? Like, how would it look like? A lot of people, as we know, that a lot of hotels in Lagos, and they'll tell you to your face, they increase their prices in anticipation of the new tax law. So they increase their prices for food. I mean, when you ask them what happened, they're like, come on now. not this new tax law. So it's like, so these concerns have to be taken into consideration. And when they're taken into consideration, you can now bake that into the rollout. And I'm not rollout, you can now bake that into implementation. So for me, so from my perspective, that would look like very good training for the businesses on, and they need to, in sometimes in tax laws, certain tax laws, depending on the country, will have an example. You know, when they write the rules, they have an example. They say, you know, this is the rule, you know, 15 million in turnover, and then this is a tax or whatever it is. And then they give an example, and they run through this entire example of a fake company that, you know, that rule impacts. So companies need to understand this. Companies need to understand that what are their responsibilities? What are their responsibilities to their employees? You know, on the back end, on the payroll side, what are they supposed to be taking out of their employees' paychecks? So that kind of learning has to be made available for the company. And it's not necessarily going to be the job of the regulatory body for that to happen. It'll be, you know, the accounting professionals of the world. You know, we have the various firms in Nigeria. I don't want to name drop because I don't want to sound like I'm picking one accounting firm over the other, but we have those law firms. But in order for that to happen, those firms need to understand what that rollout, what those concerns are for the businesses and how it is actually going to impact the businesses. Else, like you said, it's a theoretical exercise. Because say, for example, somebody, a company, let's just say Williams Wheat. Right? Williams Wheat. Williams Wheat is a company in Nigeria. Williams Wheat has some employees, and Williams Wheat is responsible for withholding, you know, they're going to withhold a certain portion for personal income taxes, withhold it from the employee's paycheck, you know, or whatever it is. If Williams Wheat doesn't understand that their employee that only makes 500,000 naira doesn't fall into any band of taxation, then Williams Wheat is going to do the wrong thing. And so, but the company has to understand that. And the community, the tax community, has to really, rather than rely on misinformation and rumors, they have to, we kind of have to say, okay, Nigerian Revenue Service, this is what's happening. How can this be addressed? Like, this is how these companies are going to react to this law. This is what they're going to do. Hotels are going to raise prices. They're going to raise food prices. We're going to go into the market and, you know, all the, like, what do we do with that? And so that, I think you said those structures or those are the things that would have to be implemented. And then I think you'll see ease of rollout, ease of understanding, and you'll see the kind of, you'll see that businesses are, they may not necessarily like what's happening, but they'll have an understanding of what's happening and then what they need to do. Because who wants to be confused as a business? Businesses have too much to deal with. So give them the information and let it be the right information on the front end. Another long-winded answer to your question.
All right. So now, can you hear me?
Absolutely. Yes.
Okay. Right. So how does the linkage of the taxpayer identification number to BVN and the national identity number and financial transactions impact everyday citizens' privacy, financial inclusion, and banking access? And what safeguards should the NRS prioritize to prevent misuse and build public trust?
So this is a very interesting question for a number of reasons. I think it's important for us to understand what are the limits of the NRS, right? Nigeria Revenue Service. What are the limits of NRS? You know, assessing, collecting, accounting for taxes and other revenues, right, in the Federation, right? The entire country, essentially, now. As it relates to these the linkages with BVN and NIN. So you have two regulatory bodies. Sorry, I'm using my hand so much. So you have Nigeria Revenue Service, and then you have CBN. Now, this regulatory body is going to, they have their concerns that they have to address privacy-wise, right? As does this one. Now, if these two are not talking, then Nigerian Revenue Service may not know that there is a privacy risk that hasn't yet been addressed by, you know, by CBN or by NIBS, or NIBS is the people they issue the NINs, but it hasn't been addressed by NIBS. So there has to be this happening in the first place. Now, to be quite frank and honest, anybody that has a smartphone is and thinks that they have an element of privacy is lying to themselves. Because when you now go on Jumia and you look for a particular product, whether it be a shoe or what have you, you now begin to see different ads for that same shoe on other websites. So the element of privacy is this idea of, you know, privacy. We kind of have to take it into context. So there has to be a, so first of all, there has to be this conversation between the two regulatory bodies. The Nigeria Revenue Service has to find a way of protecting taxpayer information and making sure that it's not out there for everybody and for the world, not making sure that it's not easily accessible. And then on, you know, same with BVN and NIN, that the same thing has to happen. So, and I think if that can happen, that linkage, if that happens, we can see that linkage between the two, it may not necessarily, if it's done right and done well, and the proper things are set in place, like whatever those backstops may be. Okay, whatever those backstops may be, give me one moment. So if those things are set in place, and okay, give me one moment. Okay, can you hear me? Oh, no, you can't hear me. Okay. All right, fantastic. So if the proper, I'm going to call them backstops, are set in place, then you can adequately protect citizens' privacy. Who has access to this information? Is it everybody at the bank that has access to this information? Is it everybody at, who has access to see a Nigerian's BVN/NIN and then TIN? Like at the bank, who has that kind of access? So, and then obviously, and then financial inclusion, I think that those linkages, so how does it impact financial inclusion? Unfortunately, do we really know how it impacts financial inclusion until we actually see it being rolled out? And unfortunately, because there is a bit of lack of clarity for the citizens and what are the limits of enforcement, we don't know what the limits of enforcement are. It's not clear to every citizen what the limits of enforcement are with regard to this rollout. So because of that, there's going to be a bit of uncertainty in how it impacts financial inclusion until we see it happening. And that's not, obviously, that's not ideal, I don't think, for anybody. I don't think that's even what the legislatures or the regulatory body wants to see happen. But that's just what we have on the ground. So, and that kind of goes to the issue of banking access. Who has this information to access? Because I think the last thing that Nigerians want is for their information to go out into a system that they already do not trust. And Nigerians are supposed to sit down and not have any questions and not have any concerns about their TIN, their BVN, their NIN. That's not possible. Like, Nigerians will have questions and concerns. And so who has access to that? Hopefully it will make banking on the flip side, hopefully it will make banking smoother for the citizens, hopefully. Don't really know. But what safeguards should the NRS prioritize to prevent misuse and build public trust? These things that we've talked about, they just have to be addressed. As Nigerians, we can't shy away from addressing an issue or concern, because we just can't, especially with this new tax law, we can't shy away from headfirst addressing the issue. The number one thing that Nigerians want to know when these taxes are being collected is, number one, why? Why is it being collected? How is it going to impact me? That is the number one thing they want to know. How is it going to impact me? Practically, how is it going to look like? Am I now going to be paying, as my dad likes to say, through the nose for things at the store when I go to the market? Like, how is it going to impact me? What is going to be done with the money? So those types of questions have to be addressed head first. Else, public trust, it may just be a thing of wishes. So those are kind of some of the safeguards that NRS should prioritize to prevent misuse. So limiting the access to certain individuals, if that information is accessed illegally, what are the consequences to the individual that accessed it? Will they be taken to court? Will they be prosecuted criminally? Like, will they be fined? How will this information be accessed by the approved individuals? Will they have access to it on their computer at home? Can they log in only at the office? Will they only be accessed from the IP address that is associated with the office? So, there kind of has to be these kind of things on the back end to kind of prevent misuse. Who has to be trained in order to access this information, both, on the banking end, on the tax end? So there's a myriad of things, a myriad of safeguards that need to be put in place. And then that needs to be communicated to the public. Nigerian citizens, we know that these are your concerns. Because of that, we have limited the access of your TIN, BVN, NIN to these individuals, or maybe this department. And even in this department, it has to be people that have been working for the agency for X amount of years, or that have X amount of years in a particular industry. So these are the things that we have done to address these concerns that you all have that will prevent misuse. People that are caught will be prosecuted criminally. They will not be able to make bond. So that all has to be, those are the type of practical safeguards that need to happen. Then, even system-wise, in the system, in the computers that are accessing this information, does the system has to be programmed to only recognize a certain level of login? Maybe will only be accessed for certain computers. There's a number of things, and Nigeria has the infrastructure to do all of it. It's just making it happen. So, yeah, that I hope that answers the question.
Oh, yes, that does answer the question well. Thank you so much, ma'am. Right, so this has been really, really interesting and very insightful. And as we round up, what advice would you give to Nigerian lawmakers, to the taxpayers, Susan, and to businesses? to actually, you know, support a good implementation of the tax, of the new tax laws, and how we can live and all benefit from this system.
Such a good question. Such a good question. So, to the citizens, I believe in being annoying. I'm going to say being annoying because that's how it might be perceived. So the regulatory bodies have social media, right? They have their social media pages. They have their Twitter pages and things like that. They have, in this area of social media, when you want to get your concern out, you're not going to pick up the phone and call 080 or whatever it is. You're going to go online, whatever, you know, whether it's Twitter, well, X, let me not say Twitter, whether it's X or Instagram, and you're going to air your concerns because that's, everybody can see it and then it can be addressed. So what Nigerians are doing is we're kind of having these conversations, you know, in our various groups. You know, we're listening to different people that are having these conversations. Are all of that is, and I'm sure the if you go on what used to be Federal Inland Revenue's X handle, you'll see a number of things, number of comments and whatnot. But it's mostly insults. So we have to find a way of citizens of getting our concerns out to the regulatory body. And the way we're going to have to do that is to bombard them and be annoying. There are some people that have access to, shall we say, they have good social media access in order to get these concerns out there. It's not all these conversations that we're having in our groups, in our family group chat, with our cousins, in our, you know, old girls, you know, association, or whatever it is that is going to get our concerns addressed. It is annoying the regulatory body. And that can happen in various ways. In some countries, they have lobbyists that do it. The lobbyists are the ones that bombard the regulatory body and say, y'all need to address this. In other places, they have well-placed companies that do it. However we need to do it. So that's for the citizens. And of course, I think that just in general, because Okime, you also asked, just advice in general, right? The tax professionals, they've done a very good job of getting the information out there. And I think also the team that did the rollout that Mr. Taiwo was on, they've tried to do a good job of getting the information out there, but it's not getting out there. So the KPMGs, the PwCs, the EYs, the Deloittes of the world, the big four, what I would like to see is some sort of concerted, disseminated effort amongst the big four and then others to sensitize the citizens, as particularly the businesses, on how this looks. Having roundtables, you know, once a week, various states, so that the businesses know what to expect, what you do, what you don't do. And I see that some of that is being done, but it's not being done at the rate the questions and the concerns are coming in. So, but if that was done, I think that would really, really help tremendously a lot, because people rely on, they trust the big four, you know, they trust the law, they trust the intelligence of what the big four are saying. And so those types of things can be utilized to help individuals and to help the rollout and to help implementation and conversely enforcement. Because one more thing, what I don't want to see is as this law is being enacted, that things are happening to Nigerians and it shouldn't be happening. Like money is being taken out, let's just say money is being taken out of a paycheck at a certain rate, and that shouldn't be the case. Like that, those are things that I don't want to see. People are getting in trouble for things that maybe Nigeria Revenue Service said, we're not going to make that an issue. So those are the things that I don't want to see. So That's why I gave the suggestions that I gave. So thank you all so much for the opportunity to discuss this. It's been a very fantastic conversation.
Thank you so much, ma'am. It's been very insightful, educating. For me, the most simplified part of the thing, like is the family explanation of how the local governments get to collect the tax and being on it, and also how the consolidation can be ways that it could actually impact, other than just serving as a theoretical consolidation of taxes without the impact trickling down to those that it directly affects. Thank you very much for the insightful time. To my co-hosts, I don't know if you have any other thing to add just before we wrap up. Okay, ma'am.
Oh, no. I don't have anything to add. It was a really beautiful conversation and it was very, very understandable. So, yes, thank you for being here with us.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, Ms. Mporn, for taking time to. I understand how very inconveniencing this was for you, but thank you very much for your time and your expertise being shared with us. Thank you.
Absolutely, it was my pleasure. Thank you so much, and I appreciate the questions. I love the questions that were drafted. So thank you all for putting the time and effort into this.
Thank you, man. All right. So with that, we've come to the end of our session for today. Thank you.